We talked at the top of the program about Johnny's little adventure, and he saw a few, he said, larvae in the blackfly larvae in the river in the creek.
Yeah,
that was more like a creek that he was. He sent me pictures.
Yes, I saw him.
I call that a creek. He calls it a river. That's not a river. It's a creek. And anyways, he saw larvae floating by, and obviously, it's just the start. It's quickly arriving, that dreaded time of year. And they're called black flies. To talk to us more about that, our very special guest, Dr. Doug Curry, head of natural history at the Royal Ontario Museum and associate professor at the University of Toronto. He's been on the program before. He knows everything there is to know about black flies, but I'll bet you what he doesn't know is how to completely avoid them from biting them. Let's find out. Hey, Doug, how you doing? Hello, Doug.
Hello.
There you are. They had me turned down here. I couldn't hear. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. This is my favorite time of year.
What do you mean it's your favorite time of year? You're going to tell me it's because you love black flies, right?
I do. They're a really fascinating group of organisms, and although the females have unsavory feeding habits, they're actually generally pretty great animals.
All right, for people...
Yeah, well, I don't like you anymore.
Hey, listen, you know, there's a yin for every yang, as they
that
say.
That is true.
And Doug's yang is black flies. So, and he should, because he's an expert on the topic. He's written books and studies and co-authored the Black Flies of North America publication. And he has seen a thing or two. In fact, you've worked to study black flies in other countries as well. Is that correct?
That's right. From Siberia and the far north up in the Arctic down to Australia, black flies are really worldwide in distribution. There are about 3,000 species, and Canada has more than their fair share.
We talk about ours. When I talk to people from other parts of the world and they're, you know, going to come over and experience their first early season fishing here in Canada and more particularly here in Ontario, I always tell them about our black flies, that they are different and they're very special. And the fact that they perch on tree limbs and they swoop down and take a chunk of meat out of you and they fly away and gnaw on it for the next half hour and they laugh. Any truth? Are our black flies different here?
Well, we certainly have different species than occur in other countries. We share a lot with the U.S., of course, because we're intimately attached. But one myth I want to dispel is that they do not remove a chunk of flesh, although I must say it feels like it after they bite you. They have very fine surgical scissor-like mandibles that they slash your skin. And what they do is they pump in an anticoagulant and an anesthetic, so you don't even feel them bite. But between the anticoagulant and so forth, it does cause an allergic reaction. And so if any chunks of skin get removed, it's from the scratching afterwards.
Wow, okay. That's interesting, because mine usually leave a hole, and that's me scratching them. You're absolutely right now that I think about it. Or should we be concerned with the amount of water flowing right now?
Well, yes. I think that, you know, black flies breed in running water. I know last year was a pretty good or maybe bad season, depending on your perspective, for black flies. And so what they do at the end of the season is they lay eggs, and there's a big egg bank, if you will, along the sides of the rivers. And the next spring, depending on how much snow and rain has accumulated, a lot of those eggs are going to hatch. So although, you know, biological systems are complex, and I can't say with absolute certainty, my expectation will be that there will be more black flies than typical this year.
Okay, but I'm still having a hard time understanding the correlation there between higher water and more black flies. Because just having more water doesn't mean that there are more black fly eggs that are going to hatch. Because they'll hatch and they'll, that same number, you know, if we had less water, we're going to have the same number of black flies, in my opinion. But you're going to prove me wrong here, obviously.
Well, a lot of the eggs, sometimes they're messy with the way they drop their eggs. And so a lot of them are going to be on the side of the banks.
Ah.
And so as river levels are higher, a lot more of those eggs are going to be viable.
Gotcha.
So that's the problem.
One of the other maybe myths, but, you know, I still use it to this day, is, you know, if the weather is a little inclement, if it's cool, basically if it's colder than normal during what we would perceive to be black fly season, I often tell folks, it's a little cool, but don't complain. That means we won't have black flies. Is there any truth to that?
No, that's not true. What the cooler spring weather does is it delays their development a bit, and they'll pick up just fine once the weather warms up. So so it might be a bit slow this year. I expect the first black flies are on the wing now. But the real bad ones that like humans won't be out probably until early June.
Okay, early June. That's right, perfect time for that peak summer migration into the outdoors. Oh my God! I often ask this question too, Doug. Is, you know, sometimes I find myself in the deepest, thickest part of the jungle, as it were, and I get, you know, just consumed by black flies, and I ask myself, okay, had I not come into this area, no other living thing would have been here. No other human, for sure, and probably no other animal. How would these bugs have survived then? And I want you to hold on to that answer, if you could, because I don't want to miss a single piece of it, but I have to take a quick break. Can you sit tight with us a couple more minutes, Doug?
Absolutely.
More Journal after this. Don't you dare go away. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Angela Bell. He is Stephen Labadie. We have Derek Brandeo, Jessica Ellis on the board. And on the line with us, we have Dr. Doug Curry, expertise in all things biting, especially black flies. He's head of natural history at the Royal Ontario Museum, associate professor at the University of Toronto. And like I said, he is an expert. He knows everything there is to know about black flies and then some. And, of course, that's a big concern for us who love to spend most of our time in the outdoors and traveling into wilderness areas because that's where they live. And I was asking Doug just before the break, what are they – so I'm in there, and they chew down on me real good, and then I think, well, had I not come in here, what would have happened to those black flies, Doug?
Well, black flies are master hunters, and they actually have pretty good eyesight. But the thing they really cue in on is carbon dioxide. And so any living, breathing thing emits carbon dioxide, and they're very good at tracking that. So even if you're buried deep into the woods, they'll find you.
And how far would they travel for that? Like, can they sense me coming like 100 yards away or a mile? Like, what's
Well, a mile is outside their range, but certainly, 100, 200 meters. Often they'll see shadows if you're moving. That they'll certainly pick that up. But we all leave a bit of a plume of carbon dioxide behind us, and so they'll use that once they kind of see you. They'll start homing in on the carbon dioxide, and then the final clue is heat. They will not bite cold-blooded organisms, so they won't be bothering turtles and frogs and so forth. But birds and mammals are all fair game. So those three cues, visual, carbon dioxide, heat, those, you know, once we check those three boxes, they're down and feeding.
And because we're humans, there's absolutely no way that we cannot be, you know, bit then. What you're saying is there's just no way, at least that I know of. I mean, there's ways to try and help repel them. Nothing is 100% successful unless, I guess, we stop breathing, stop sweating, and become invisible.
Yeah, they'll certainly be attracted to you, but the best things that work are tried and true repellents like that contain DEET, or yes, there's a fairly new one with Icaridin in it that also works quite well. So any of the exposed flesh, I recommend, you know, slathering that on. But the rest of your body, if you tuck your pants into your socks and wear a t-shirt under your shirt and so forth and kind of batten down the hatches, unlike mosquitoes, they can't bite through your clothes. So, but you do want to, you know, make sure that all the possible points of entry are sort of taped down and keep them out, because they do like crawling under your clothes and getting into those constricted spaces to bite.
So we need one of those yellow suits that they wear during when they're removing all that dangerous contaminant.
Hazmat suits.
Yeah,
you could wear a hazmat suit. That would keep them out just fine. Some people like wearing bug jackets. I don't like having my face covered up, so
no.
I actually favor those sort of open meshed bug jackets that you can put into a bag and put DEET in, and that does a pretty good job at keeping them away. But, you know, if you get into a feeding frenzy, and sometimes around dusk, they really ramp up. They'll basically commit kamikaze on your on your face, because they'll drown in the deep. That's so they can be very annoying, even if they don't bite.
And the problem, of course, that we face is you know, you mentioned DEET. I know that DEET seems to be the only thing that will effectively repel them, but of course, it's a never-ending battle with regulation on the amount of DEET that, you know, companies can put in their product. I, you know, and I don't want to do the old, I remember, you know, when I used to walk to school, but I remember back in the day, you put DEET on, I mean, you could run around naked in the woods and you were bug free. And of course, now with the regulation of DEET and being, I think we're down to 28% DEET that we can have in the formulation, it's still okay, but not what it used to be. I'll be honest with you.
No, what you have to do now is put, you know, reapply it every so often. So as soon as you sense them breaching your defenses, you have to start putting it back on. In the U.S., they still do sell a high octane DEET. You can still get the 98% formulation. So that's something that's on my shopping list if I'm heading up to the Arctic, for example. You don't want to be fooling with the lower concentrations. This is, you want to have the all-day protection. So it's good to have a supply of that.
Dr. Curry, one final question that just dawned on me. You know, with all the airborne vectors that are going around now with various diseases, including, of course, malaria, and then you've got ticks that will lead to Lyme disease, is there anything other than that nasty bite and the scratching that black flies leave behind?
Well, fortunately for us in North America, there are no human-borne diseases that are carried by black flies. There is one disease that black flies transmit to humans in West Africa and parts of South and Central America, something called river blindness. So, but thank goodness that organism does not occur in the black flies up here. They do, however, transmit a whole variety of diseases to wild birds and mammals. So so from that respect, we're lucky. There's nothing to worry about. They're more of an aesthetic thing. But I think overall, given that the important role that they play in aquatic ecosystems as an incredibly important component of the food web, we should generally be happy that they're only out and about bothering humans in June.
So when I say, and I look up in the skies and say, why? Why did God create this thing? What possible good could it be? Well, you're saying there is a good.
Oh, sure. They can occur in up to about 750 to a million individual larvae per square meter of stream bed in real ideal habitat. So if you take them out, they're going to have severe consequences in the food webs in which they live. So I don't think we want to have that.
I'm with you on that. Anything you recommend, I'm all over it, Doug. I appreciate it.
Not at all. It's
listen,
my pleasure.
We thank the ROM for making you available as well. I want to remind folks the ROM is a very special place, and we can all learn a whole lot about nature, including black flies. Who knew it?
And if you want to learn more about black flies, the ROM is having an exhibit called Bloodsuckers that will open in November.
Oh, wow. Wow, that sounds fantastic. Bloodsuckers at the ROM. I'm in. Doug, thanks a lot, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Excellent.
Dr. Doug Curry from the Royal Ontario Museum, who comes on the program about once a year. I did not know that the ROM was having a special black fly mosquito event.
I'm going to check that out. That's pretty cool.
You and me, buddy.
Yeah, sounds good.